This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
One of the most complex, not one of the most difficult, it's just complex, masechtas that there is. And I've been struggling a little bit with how I'm going to give you, those of you who are not learning through it, a taste and a sense of what it is and how beautiful it is. The one shiur, my introduction to the Masechta, is on the website that I did in California a few weeks ago. And today we'll do the a second shiur in Masechta Yevamos. And I'm just going to take an omud from the recent from the last few days. Take one Mishnah that happens to be in that omud. I could do the same with any Mishnah, just to give you a sense of the beauty of the mechanics of how it operates. And we'll from there we'll try and extract some principles as well. So we're on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. And you'll see from the Mishnah, this is one of a series of many Mishnahs with different permutations of almost the same scenarios. Okay, they're just between each Mishnah, there's a slight difference in the scenario. Because Mishnah is all scenarios. That's what a Mishnah is. A Mishnah is a scenario that teaches a principle. And in Yevamos, it's almost, it starts with first principle, and then it says to second principle, to third principle, variations on third principle, variations of variations on third principle, into fourth principle. It's just the most beautifully structured Masechta. It's all dealing with one mitzvah. It's all, this whole of Yevamos is one mitzvah. It's complexity, it's brilliance, it's depth, it's just one mitzvah. The mitzvah that if a man dies without leaving children, the brother, the surviving brother, or one of the surviving brothers, marries the widow. That's called yibum. In the event that he can't, or they don't want to, or for whatever reason, there's chalitza. So yibum and chalitza are two parts of the same category of mitzvah. That's the only mitzvah in the Masechta. That's what we deal with. But there's just structured beauty, one layer upon the other. So here's the one that just happens to be on the daf that I selected for today, which is the following. You've got to picture it. Just use imagination. Don't try and do it in a linear way because you'll get confused. Just picture the family scene. Give them names. Give in your mind, see faces that you know. And just see real people, because then you'll be able to follow it. It's the middle of the Daf Lamed, the middle Mishnah. There are three Mishnahs on this Omud. Four Mishnahs on this Omud. We're on the middle one. Shlosho Achin, there are three brothers. Okay, picture three brothers. Got them in your mind? Not A, B, and C, because then you get into linear and you get very confused. Just picture them, real people, three brothers. Shnayim mehem nesuyin shtei achayos. Let's add a layer. Two of the brothers are married to two sisters. Now you can picture that. Three brothers, two of them marrying two girls from the same family, two sisters. Everybody's very happy, big simcha, one set of machatonim, not two. It's wonderful. Ve'echod nosu nochris. But there wasn't a third sister, so the third one marries another girl. So now I've got a nice happy family, three brothers, all married. Kenan Hora, two of them married to two sisters, one big happy mishpocha, and a third one married to another very nice girl. Now comes a little bit of tragedy. Meis echod mi bale achayas. One of the men who married the sisters dies. Okay, without children. So now the question is, what happens to the widow? The konas nosui nochris. Firstly, could the other brother marry that widow? No, why not? He's married, doesn't matter, but he's married to her sister. That's Arias, that's one of the forbidden relationships. So that he can't do. So the first brother is married to the other sister, he can't do Yibum, but the other one can. So the other one does. So now the third brother married to the outsider marries the sister. So now there are two brothers left. One is married to a sister, the other is married to a sister, plus another woman, who he was married to first. Umeso ishto shosheni, tragedy strikes again. And now the second brother's wife dies. So he's left alive. Okay? Well, no problem with that. Sad, but no problem. Now comes the problem and another tragedy. Va'achar kach meis nosi nochris. And now the boy who is married to the non-sister girl, but is also married to one of the sisters, dies. So who's left after all the skittles have fallen down? Who's left? You've got a woman who was not a sister of anybody, and you've got her sorrow, we call it, the wife of the same husband, who was the sister of a now deceased woman, who was married to her brother-in-law, who has died. So all we've got left are two women, and one guy. The guy is unmarried at this point. He's a widower. The two women, their relationship is tsoros, and one is an ex-sister-in-law of the surviving guy. Got the picture? Now what's the shaila? What's the shaila now? Okay, Moshe?
The wife who originally was married to the eldest brother remarried the guy whose wife just died, who was the sister.
Right. Can the surviving man marry the woman who was his sister-in-law, but is no more, and do the mitzvah of Yibum? So right now, is there a forbidden relationship? No, right now there actually isn't. So if she were not married to anybody, if she were just a divorcee or whatever it is, could he marry her now? Yes, his wife has died. After the death of a wife, one may marry the wife's sister. You cannot marry the wife's sister during her lifetime, but you can marry after her death. So under normal circumstances, the surviving brother could marry that woman. But can he marry her in the format of Yibum is the question. We would think, why not? Isn't that so? If he could marry her normally, what's the problem now? On the contrary, now there's a mitzvah to marry her. She's free. And he's not married to her sister. There seems to be no halachic impediment. Says the Mishnah, Harezu asura alav oilomis. He can never marry her, ever again. No matter what happens. That's it. Hoil v'nesra alav shah achas, because she was once forbidden to him. Ah, but we just said, you can have somebody forbidden to you, and through change of circumstances, she's no longer forbidden. So for example, man wants to marry Mrs. So-and-so, who's married. Can't, Aishas Ish. Mrs. So-and-so gets a get. He can. We don't say, oh, she was once forbidden to you, she's forbidden forever. So she was once forbidden, now she's available. Mrs. X becomes a widow. She's available. A man's sister-in-law becomes available because his wife dies. That's okay. What's this here? Now because she was married to my brother, who died, and she was once my sister-in-law but isn't anymore, I can never marry her again? That's what the Mishnah says. Isn't that an odd Mishnah? That's Yevamos. When you get the picture, it's just... And this is part of the way of transporting yourselves into another world. Because now, all of a sudden, if I left you with this, I would expect that you wouldn't sleep tonight. That you would be going over and over this. And all of your mind is in a different place. And what are you dealing with? You're not dealing with marriage. You're dealing with halacha. All of a sudden, your mind is completely absorbed in halacha. And that's the best way to get rid of ego. Because while you're trying to figure out why on earth Mr. X can't marry Mrs. Y, you're not in ego. You're in halacha. You're learning Torah. And that's the Mishnah. So it's such an odd Mishnah. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, so the Gemara says, Kol Yevomo she'ena nikerei bo bishas nefilo, Yevomo yovo aleho, Harei hi ke'eshes ach sheyesh lo bonim ve'asura. So Rav Yehuda Amarad explains it. And he says, there is a posuk in the Torah that says, ki yeshvu achim yachdov. If two brothers are living together at the same time, they're living together in the same period. Umeis echod mehem, and one of them dies, uvein ein lo, and he has no son. Lo tiye eshes hameis achutzo l'ish zar. The widow of the departed brother does not just go out into the marketplace to some strange man. Yevomo yovo aleho, her yovom, her brother-in-law, should come to her, ulekecholo leisho, and take her as a wife, veyibma, and perform the mitzvah of yibam. That's the Torah's, that's where the Torah says it in Dvorim, that is the mitzvah of yibam. Says Rav Yehuda Amarav, if at the time of nefilo, nefilo means the fall, and the fall, why does it use the word nefilo? Actually going to be very important to understand this concept. What is the word nefilo? She falls. Where does she fall? Her husband's just died. Yeah, it's all, well, it's almost like she's up here being held by her husband. He's the brother. The husband falls away and she falls into his hand. That's really what happens with Yibum. She falls into his hands. Didn't have to go out looking for a shidduch or anything. Brother died. She falls right into his hands. So that's any situation, any woman about whom you cannot say at the moment of nefilah, which is the moment of her husband's death, yavom or yavo aleh, her yavom will take over. Such a woman, harehi ke'eshes ach sheyesh lo bonim, she is like a brother-in-law, like a sister-in-law who does have sons. Now, what is the status of a sister-in-law who does have children? Now that's the Asuras Isur Alamis. So Rav Yehuda Amarav is explaining, this is, there is a problem here because underpinning a Yovom is a very serious Isur. What is the Isur? Sister-in-law. That's very serious. It's only for Yibum that is set aside. If it is not set aside, it's in place. And if it's in place, it's always in place. Now we're going to get to a deeper or a clearer understanding of that principle. But to do so, we're going to have a look at a Tosfos on Daf Beis on Medalef. Tosfos asks a really interesting question. Tosfos asks, the last Tosfos on Daf Beis on Medalef, V'achos ishtoi, the Mishnah mentions as one of the prohibited relationships a sister-in-law. Ein lahakshos, let me tell you the question of Tosfos outside and then we'll do it inside. Tosfos says, what if we just learnt? If at the time of Yibum he could not step in, then she's forbidden forever. Okay, that's what we've just learnt. If at the time of Yibum she can step in, then the Isur of sister-in-law disappears. But if at the time of death he cannot step in, the prohibition of sister-in-law stays in place and never goes away. Asks Tosfos, what happens if at the time of death she is in a state of nidah? She's not permitted to have relations at that time of her cycle. So at that time, can the Yovam take over? No. How can he ever take over thereafter? Isn't that a good question? Asks Tosfos. So look inside. Ein lahakshos de nido te asa liyavim. That's not a question even to say. A nido should always be asur. Afapishe metahara achakach, even though she will go to the mikveh later on and become permissible. Kemoi ach ishtoi, like a sister-in-law. She'ein misya benes afilu meta ishtoi acharechein, who cannot perform yibun even if his wife dies later on. Deloy dami la'achus isho sh'ar arayi. Deloy dami. Because there's no comparison. Why? Tosfos gives two reasons. One, de'achus isho sh'ar arayis ha'isur oymed al hayobum tfei mish'ar b'nei odom. Because sister-in-law and other forbidden relationships apply to him more than to anybody else. She's my sister-in-law, she's not your sister-in-law. You can marry her, I just can't. So the problem is not her, the problem is a specific relationship between us. Whereas a nido cannot have relationships with anybody at that moment. The problem is her. It's not about relationship. And therefore there's a difference. Our nido lekula al ma'asiro. But a nido is forbidden to everybody. Va'afilu benidoto, va'afilu benidoso. Va'afilu benidoso, mashma bipsochim, the bas yibumhi. Even while she's a nido, she's yibum applies. Dikoma Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan says, ishto nido, Boal Chayev. If a man has relations with his own wife who is a nido, that's an isur what? Chorus. Very serious isur. What happens if a man, if a yovam yovamto in nido, boal? What happens if a yovam has relations with his yovama who is a nido? Her brother dies, he steps in right away, she happens to be a nido. Potus, not an Issu Chorus. Before the Maishnan, the Gemara asks, what's the difference? Answers the Gemara, Yevamta the Ka'avid Mitzvah, he's performing a mitzvah with her at least. So there's a difference. So what are we seeing here? That although she's a Nido, and they shouldn't have, the link still works. Yibum takes place. Whereas with a forbidden relationship, Yibum, it's not just about thou shalt not, it's ineffective, it doesn't work. So there are two different kinds of arayas. There are two different kinds of forbidden relationships. In one forbidden relationship, it works, it's just forbidden. In another forbidden, so let's say marriage. A man marries a nido. Right? That's not the right way to do it, and when it is, one has to do it, but he doesn't do it, he marries a nido. Is the marriage valid? Yes, the marriage is valid. If a man marries his sister, is the marriage valid? No. Two different kinds of arayas. So in one case, the act is forbidden, but the relationship is intact. In the other case, the relationship is forbidden, and therefore the relationship never happens. So that's the first difference Tosfos comes along with and says, and therefore, while the nido state, which is a temporary impediment in her, that affects the connection, the sexual relationship, but not the emotional relationship. So, for example, when a husband and wife, when a wife is in nido, how does that affect their marriage? It doesn't. It has no impact on their marriage. They're perfectly married. It only has an effect on their physical relationship. So, here too, a yovam has relationships with his yovama. It's yibum. He's performed the mitzvah. He's done an avera too. But he's potter. Not so with a forbidden relationship. There is no relationship. So we'll discuss that a little bit more deeply in a few moments. The next thing Tosfos says is an amazing idea. V'od nira l'chalek. There's another difference. The achos isho afal pi shemeso ishto achareichen shuv lo tizakek liyibum kivan shenifter osha achas. The reason that a woman who was potter because she was a sister-in-law does not become allowed when she's no longer a sister-in-law. Okay, so let's look at the case. Let's look at a simple case. Man is married to Rochel. His brother's married to Leah. Rochel dies, and then his brother dies. He can't marry Leah. Okay, why not? And even if Leah was never married, what happens if then he would be able to marry? What is the reason? It says Tosfos, because Mishum Shenemar Derachel Darchei Noam. It's just not nice. It's just not Derachel Darchei Noam. We have a principle in the Torah of the ways of the Torah are Noam. They're pleasant. They're fair. They're beautiful. And this isn't nice. What's not nice about it? Why is it not nice? What is her state? If he were allowed to marry her later on, what is her status interimly? So let's say leave out the second brother, even leaving aside the Yibum stuff. Almost if you say, let's say Yibum. So right now, brother dies. Sister-in-law is now a potential Yavoma, but she's a sister-in-law. She's my wife's sister, so I can't do Yibum. So now, if we said that if his wife dies, then he can do Yibum, what is her status in the meantime? His sister-in-law, and therefore what? But what can she do? Can she get married to somebody else? She can't. She's sitting around waiting to, what can she do? Either she has to have chalitza, and if he doesn't want to give her chalitza, he could just say, you wait there. Wait until my wife's not doing so well. She's having got a long way to go. When she's gone, I'll be ready for you. That's power. That's abusive. That you can't do. If at the moment there's a possibility of a relationship, put the relationship together. If both are in a position where they can't, that's something else. But where one is available and the other one says, hang on, that's abusive. And in that Darchei Noam idea, we'll see there's a whole understanding of relationships that we've got to look at. That's what Tosfos says. I want to go through the Lomdus one little bit further. Those of you who are with me, that's fine, come with me. Those of you who are not, take a little rest. And you'll join us again in a few minutes' time. Here's the question that the Acharonim deal with. What is Tosfos saying? And the difference between these two possibilities is very subtle. Is Tosfos saying the reason for the halacha is Darchei or Darchei Noam? What is the halacha? The halacha is, as Rav Yehuda Omar Rav said, what is the halacha? Kivan Shinesra, what did he say? On Daf Lamed. She'en ani kwebe yushas nefilot, or as the Mishnah says, Arezu Asura Oilomis, and as he says, Harehi Keshis Ach, She'esh Loibonim Va'asura. So, What is he saying? Is he saying the reason for that is the Rochel Dachena? That law rests on a philosophic principle of the Rochel Dachena. That's why. So why is she not allowed to become available to him later on? Because the Rochel Dachena. That's possibility one. Possibility two is we need to determine whether the permissibility of marriage through Yibum is determined only at the moment of death or can be determined at any moment thereafter. Okay, that's our issue. At the moment of death, she's a sister-in-law. Is that the moment of determination and we don't revisit it? Or is the moment of determination any time they want to get together? He wakes up 2 years later and says, I want to do Yibum. My wife has died, I want to do Yibum. Do we say at that moment there's a determination? Says Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, no, it's done, it's gone. What Tosfos might be saying is, Drachel Darchei Noam teaches us that the moment of determination is the beginning. Do you follow the difference? In case one, the philosophic principle drives the halacha. In case two, the philosophic principle resolves a halachic dilemma, which then becomes set in stone. Do you follow the difference? So, in case one, if we had such a case today, and I would say to you, or she would say, why can't I marry my brother-in-law now? We would say, it's not the way we do things. In case two, she would say, why can't I marry my brother-in-law? We would say, because the moment of determination, of permissibility, is the moment of death, and at that time you weren't permitted. That's the reason. If you now want to go into, and how do you know that that's the moment, and not the later moment? Because if it was the later moment, we would create situations that are not. So it helps us interpret God's intention, or the Torah's intention, because there's ambiguity. It's not clear in the Torah when the moment of decision is. Is it at the moment of intended marriage, or is it the moment of death? Not clear. Drachel Darchei Noam clarifies and says it's moment of death. Now we put Drachel Darchei Noam away. It's irrelevant now. It's resolved our halachic dilemma. Now we work with halacha. Whereas the first way of reasoning was the Rachel Darchenoam is the reason behind each case we'll ever have of this. The reason is the Rachel Darchenoam. So I'll read you Rashi, or those of you who've got a full Gemara in front of you can look at Rashi on Daf Pei Ches Amud Beis. Pei Zayin Amud Beis, I'm sorry. The very last Rashi in the ninth Perek. Rashi says, now look at the words of Rashi, or listen to the words of Rashi very carefully, and then tell me, is Rashi going first case or second case? How is Rashi interpreting Darchim, Rachel Darchenoam? Rachel Darchenoam, v'zu shehoyolo bein v'lo niskoke liyobom, v'nises l'shuk. Rashi is talking about a case here of a woman whose husband died and they did have a child. Later on, the child died. Can you daven to Yibum? Answer is no. Since at the moment of death, Yibum didn't apply, it doesn't apply now. Why did Rachel Darchenoam? That's what Rashi is explaining. So this woman who's had a child did not have a connection with a Yibum because she had a child. Imagine Vinises Lashuk. Imagine she now marries an outsider. The widow with a child marries another man. Umeis benor, then her son dies. Im toma tachalot, now we would say, if the moment of determination is later, then we would say, oh my goodness, now she's without a child, she has to perform yibum with the first husband, with the brother, but she's already married to somebody else, so she needs chalitza. That's how we would resolve it, right? So you've got Mrs. So-and-so, and her husband dies. She has a child. She has a brother-in-law, but she doesn't need Yibum because she has a child. No Yibum, no Chalitza. She marries Mr. X. They live happily. The child unfortunately dies. She's very sad and upset. And now the brother comes along and says, hey, you need Chalitza. Because we never did Yibum. And now my brother's wife is without a child. Says Rashi, Harehi miskano al bailo. What's her husband going to feel like? That all this time you've kind of been connected to your ex-brother-in-law, and now you kind of got to get a chalitza from him? What's all this about? It's not the Rachel Darchenoam. The essence of what Rashi said, but let's go further than Rashi to get the wording right. Hilkach al korcho, therefore, by force, when the Torah says, Bein Einloi, he dies without a son, Bishas Misa Koma. It must be talking about death time. Vahare Yeshla, and at death time she had a son. You must interpret the Pasuk that way. Otherwise it's not, it would be Drachel Darchenoam, it would be untenable. So we're using Drachel Darchenoam. Is Rashi case 1 or case 2? Case 1 or case 2? Case 2. We're using Drachel Darchenoam to give pshat of the Pasuk. When the Torah says Bein Ein Lo, what does it mean? At any time on the timeline, or at moment of death. If it's any time on the timeline, it's untenable. She'll get married meanwhile, and then you're going to have chalitza. What will her husband? That's terrible. Can't do that. So the Torah must mean, when it says the bein ein loy, it must mean at time of death. It can't mean anything else. Rashi's clear. Rashi's the second case. We're using Rachel Darchenoam to resolve two possible textual interpretations. And to determine it's one, not the other. Now we're finished with the Rachel Darchenoam because we have clarity. Tosfos, the Netziv says, is learning the other way. And you can see it in the words. Not everybody agrees with the Netziv. But the Tosfos says, So to the way, look at the way Tosfos puts it, like four or five lines on the bottom of the Tosfos. Kol yavomo she'ena nikere bo b'shas nefilo yavomo yavo aleo. That's our case of Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. It says the same. Kol yavomo she'ena nikere bo b'shas nefilo yavomo yavo aleo. Anybody who doesn't fit into the category of at the time of death the yudum can take place. Harehi ke'eshes ach she'esh lo bonim va'asuro de'en ze darche noah. Because that death, that little dalet in Tosfos, shows us that Tosfos is giving a philosophic reason for the halacha. If she now is responsible to marry a woman, she's already been potter from, that's a kind of an untenable situation. So from the phrasing in Tosfos, it seems as if he's saying, exactly, if darchei noam were not an issue, she would be allowed to. But because of darchei noam, she can't. Whereas Rashi is saying the reason she can't is because the Pasuk says she can't. How do you know that's what the Pasuk is saying? Maybe the Pasuk is saying something else. Darchei Noam tells me what the Pasuk is saying. Okay? The two possibilities of learning it.
Now, like any event, isn't there the sphere of days in that each time of Yibum that Yibum is okay? For example, if I remember correctly, there's something about a very young
then we advise. Beis Din advises. That's also Darchinam. The Torah, but that's advice. The Beis Din will advise them to do Chilitza rather than Yibum. Can't impose it, but they will advise it. Now, I want to take the Lomdus one step further, and then we'll tie up with a few of the philosophic consequences of all of this. Rav Elchanan Wasserman asks the following question. This is in Kovet Seoris and Aleph, and section Aleph, paragraph Dalet. He says, in the case of our Mishnah, so let's have a look at that. Brother dies, third brother married to the disconnected woman does Yibum, sister dies, in other words, the man's remaining brothers, the other brother's wife dies, so he's no longer a sister-in-law. Then brother three dies. Brother two now wants to marry his ex-sister-in-law, is the case. Says Rav Elchanan, if we learn like Rashi, the case two way, I don't think he has a problem. But if we learn like Tosfos, it's a little bit more difficult to ask, because he asks, what's the Darchei Noam problem? When does Yibum kick in now? Right now, when brother three dies. At that, nobody's keeping anybody waiting. Brother three dies, he wants to do Yibum. Where's the problem with Darchei Noam? If you learn like Rashi, and you say, it's simply Darchei Noam teaches us that at the moment of death, that's the determinant. Maybe he's asking even according to Rashi. But here, the moment of death, there's no problem. Brother three has died. The widow is available. She's not related in any way to brother two. Why can't they have Yibum? The fact that there's history should be irrelevant to this engagement, to this interaction. And it's a bigger question according to Tosfos than according to Rashi. Rav Elchanan explains that the problem is not this Yibum. The problem is if at the moment that brother one died, that woman was not available to brother two because she was a sister-in-law, then what is her relationship to brother two? Well, an eishes ach, as if yesh lo bonim, is what Rav Yehuda Omar Rav says. It's as if, what is the relationship with an eishes ach she yesh lo bonim? It's permanent isur. Isn't that so? An eishes ach, a sister-in-law who doesn't have children, could marry the brother-in-law using the mechanism of Yibum. But an eishes ach who does have children can never marry the brother-in-law ever again. That's what this is like, says Rabbi Yehuda. It's like an eishes ach sheyesh lo bonim. That means that at the moment of the first brother's death, we determine what is the relationship here? What is the relationship of this man to this woman? The answer is, it's sister-in-law. Once you've made that determination, it never changes. So the problem, it isn't even a problem in the new man dies, the third brother dies. She is still his brother-in-law through the first brother, not the second brother. The problem is the first brother. At the moment of the first brother's death, there was a determination, and that determination never changes. And that's why that word nefilo is so important, because it gives a graphic sense of what happens. That first brother dies, she either falls into the lap of the second brother, or she doesn't. And if she doesn't, she never will. That's what's important. If she does, and that's immediate. Although the act of yibum might take place later, it could take place a day later or 10 years later, there is what we call zikr. There is an immediate halachic attachment between the widow and the brother from the moment of death. That's why you need chalitza, to cut that attachment. From the moment of death, there's a relationship, there's a connection. That's the nefilah. The brother dies, she falls into his lap, she's attached. Then we deal with it, with yibum or with chalitza. But if she doesn't fall into his lap, there's no other way they can attach. They can only attach through nefilah, through falling into it. They can't create an attachment at some time later from nowhere. That's the only way that they can attach. Right. If it's not going to be Yibum, then there's no other way to be Matir Eishesach. And the important thing here is that is determined at the moment of death. If at the moment of death there cannot be Yibum, then there's Eishesach. It's not if there's a moment of death there cannot be Yibum, then she's suspended. That's not Darche Noah, to suspend her. At the moment of death, there's got to be determination. You're either up for Yibum or Chalitza, or you're free. But you can't say, we'll figure out one day when the other wife dies, then we'll see what... Can't do that. That's not the Achinah. So what do we have? I think there are two important philosophic principles that come out of here. The one is the immediacy, the fact that Yibum is not an attachment that is created by an action. The completion of Yibum is by an action of marriage. But the connection between widow and brother-in-law is automatic. As soon as the brother dies, there's almost a biological connection. It's not even an emotional connection, because in the emotional connection you would have to do something to create the emotional connection. The fact that she was part of the family and he's died and she's left with nobody, automatically she attaches to the rest of the family. That attachment is there. The question is now, what do you do with that attachment? Do you break it, or do you perform the mitzvah of Yibum and marry her? But the attachment is there and cannot be denied. And that explains to some degree why in the act of chalitza there's the expression of spitting. Because what does spitting demonstrate? Disgust. That means that one has to recognize in chalitza one is doing something that although required by halacha and in fact a mitzvah, the fact is you're not allowing her to find a place within the family, and that's disgusting. And there's something negative about it. Chalitza shouldn't be seen as something that's just hanky-dory, you know, they want to get married, so here's chalitza and we can get on with our lives. No, there's something actually disgusting in letting this woman who has no children, and therefore she's lost connection with her family, and she now has no connection with the new family because there's no common children and her husband has died, and you're now cutting her adrift. There's something not that great. Emotionally, it's not that great. Halakhically, it might be required, but there needs to be an acknowledgement that you're cutting somebody adrift. That's the one idea. The other idea is the idea of Darche or Darche Noam, that for a man to keep a woman in a place of suspense, probably the other way around, it's not just a man to a woman, but certainly that's the way it works over here, for him to decide at his leisure, depending on circumstances, what he'll decide to do with her, that's not the Rachel Darche Noam. That's abusive. And here we're dealing with it in a situation of Yibum, which is so halachically complex, but the concept is incredibly simple. And I'm sure you've been aware of situations like that every day. where there are men, unmarried men going out, the idea of manipulating another person into a place of uncertainty and using abusive techniques to hold them there while you get your life in order is abusing another person's situation. You holding power and not allowing the other person the freedom to make decisions and to make choices. So you'll get it by person, I will marry you, and then doesn't land up, or knows all along that he's not, but wants the option, keeps his options open, and in so doing, plays with the emotions of another person, leaving that person not free because they've been manipulated into believing things that aren't true, into making decisions that business once sees it happening. You hold an option open, giving the person the sense that you're going to do it while you're busy exploring something else. You offered a job. And you're, yeah, really, I'm really interested. Give me some time to think about this. Meanwhile, you're busy checking out another job. No, the person says, look, should I look for somebody else? No, please don't look for anybody. I'm really interested. I've just got to sort out a few things, and I'm almost sure I'm going to take it. And the person's hanging on, and then you call up and say, you know what, got another job. Thank you. That's abusive. That's abusive. You're not giving the other person the same freedom that you want for yourself. To be able to say to the person, look, I'm not in a position to make a decision. I realize that means I might lose the job. It's going to take me 2 weeks to come to a decision. I'm looking at one or two other things. I can speak to you in 2 weeks' time. Another person says, does that mean I'm free to look at it at somebody else? Absolutely you are, just as I'm free to. The Mashal explains the Rachel Darche Noam as equality. You've got to have equal power. If you're free to look around, you're free to look around. But to have one party free and the other not is abusive. That's not Darche Noam. For the one party to think that they have a deal while the other party is shopping around, that's not Darche Noam. There needs to be openness about that. And that means both people in the same position. There can be trust building as a result of that. And that's Darche Noam. Otherwise, it's not Darche Noam. It's an incredibly beautiful concept of relationship that emerges from this very complex area of relatively dry halacha. But as it is with not just this Gemara, but with every other Gemara that we've learned as well, it's just amazing how we're able to extract such beautiful principles of life from halachic detail. We'll leave that there.